Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Strange Magic After Midnight, where our inspiration takes us to some very unexpected places. This show is brought to you by the Late Night Poets of allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a member of the group or the website to enjoy the show or call in and read a piece of your own, but if you like poetry, we highly recommend it. We have shows every night of the week on a variety of different topics and themes, and there's something for everyone to enjoy. This evening, we're going to be enjoying poetry that highlights intense imagery. I have to say, it's really interesting the different ways that people interpreted intense. So I think we have a very, very varied show to put on for you guys tonight. So I hope you all enjoy. And I'm your host, Incurrent Dust. I guess I should have introduced myself. But I also have a very dear friend with me tonight to discuss his poetry. And Pam, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. And yes, as you know, I always enjoy reading and discussing poetry. And of course, you know, hanging out with you and, as I always say, other cool poets. And it's funny because I was going through some of your contest entries, like just looking and grazing through them. And I did notice, as you observed, that people have various ideas of what intense imagery means. And so it's really cool, you know, to offer up a platform where there's not a specific prompt, but just rather looking for people's idea of a poem that they would consider intense imagery. So very cool.
Oh, I agree. I'm looking forward to it. So I guess we'll get the show on the road. I'm going to read a poem by Kim 436. I really like this one, and so I'm going to open the show with it. This is called This Old Truck. this old truck has been around for a while. Then again, so have I. All it needs is some tender love and care. Should be set to go for a few more miles. I stand back and remove my cap, which is my hair. Across my face spreads a rueful smile. There's not really a lot there. I walk around and kick the tires, crank the engine on. Yep, it still fires. Wipe my hand across the dash, removing some dust. Floorboards don't have a lick of rust. Dang, ain't I glad that I saw the newspaper ad. Settled on a price, I paid in cash. Before I head for home, I'll stop at the graveyard and show Dad. I finally found it, the one he had. End poem. And Pam, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I really like this. I like how it rhymes, but the rhyme is kind of gentle in its flow, so it doesn't, you know, it's not like harsh in the way that, like, not forced. I also like how emotive it is. Very much it reminds me of how my dad had when I was a kid, a GMC pickup truck, a red one from the late 1930s. And it had he had gotten it when he was a teenager, and you know, it still worked when I was a kid back in the 80s. But I like how within this rite, she builds up, like, a lot of it, you know, like the first really three stanzas are all about the purchase of the truck, you know, about the happiness that it brings her, like where it says, across my face spreads a rueful smile. There's not really a lot there. But then it really hits you at the end where she says, before I head home, I'll stop at the graveyard and show Dad. I finally found it, the one he had. And then you realize how just beautifully heart-wrenching this poem is in that finding that connection between yourself and a loved one who has passed on. So very well done.
I really agree. A lot of the rites I think that were entered in the contest actually do have more focus on the imagery. But in this, the imagery that's there is, I think, very well chosen. Like in the second stanza, talking about running your fingers through what's left of your hair, it's a small bit of imagery there of kind of sensory imagery, but it evokes a lot of meaning, you know, the fact that you're aging, the fact that there's not a lot of it left. And I think even with the brevity of that, I could really experience almost like watching a movie of someone removing the cap and running their hands through their hair as they walk around looking at this truck. And kind of what you were saying, the emotional weight of it is really cool, especially because it's very understated, I feel like. In the end, you know, the reveal of the importance of why the truck is so important is kind of quiet. It's just there for you to kind of stumble upon it. And I like the way that it's executed for that reason. Really, really cool poem.
Yeah, great comment there.
You too. And great write, Kim 436. I actually haven't read anything by this author before, so this is cool.
Oh, very cool. Always good to see some new names and faces.
Yeah, I think I really agree. And sometimes, I often avoid having pre-writes contests. I feel like a lot of people enter off-topic writes. But sometimes it's kind of cool when you do run one because you meet some new people. Just by being, you know, having that opening, I guess.
Absolutely.
And when you have a broad topic like this, and there's you don't have as much to worry about with the off-topic things. Okay, well, next up I have a piece by Guarding the Lights. And Pam, would you mind reading it for us?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to do that. All right. This is Parched Dry Bones by Garden Delight. And it goes like this. Long after the quake, tree skeletons remain a garish display. These bent, broken, bleached, dry bones resemble a Faustian fallout, a caricature of once robust growth, now a parched wasteland of haphazardly discarded extremities. You are here, lodged securely in the mud, your brokenness firmly anchored. Attempts to change discarded before they are birthed. I thought I could satisfy you if trying to erect cobblestone bridges could accomplish that. The landscape would be studded with sturdy stone arches, none of which would bear your tracks. You are as happy as you decide to be, as parched and dry as you desire, a travesty of a man, determined to stay lodged in his own muck while throwing as much of it as you can on the people closest to you. Today I move out of your range, beyond the stricken land, where sunlight supports leafy green foliage, springy grass cushions my step, and bluebirds fly free. End poem.
This is a cool piece. I really like the meaning behind it. You know, I've met people who are kind of like what's being described in this poem, determined to stay lodged in their own muck. And, you know, it kind of like when you're taught to deal with a drowning person, you know, a person who's like that will kind of fling as much of it on you as possible and take you down with them. So, you know, this attempt to help, you know, you could see in the poem that it's futile. They would never even step onto one of these sturdy stone arches this person is trying to erect to help. And so there's that liberation in the last stanza of moving out of the range and choosing instead sunlight, springy grass, and bluebirds, and freedom. I thought it was really beautiful. And what did you think of it, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. I like how you mentioned that that how oftentimes negative people who don't want to stay move forward, that want to stay in their negativity and in the mud, it's not just about making themselves miserable. You know, it's about making the people around them miserable, throwing that mud and that dirt around. I do like how the throwing around of mud thing makes me think of the idea of the saying mud swinging, which you talk like about gossip, and you know, cause it really kind of makes me think of the idea of someone who gets their sense of self empowerment and self worth from speaking badly about other people. I also really like how the building of the stone arches to help the person move forward very much makes me think about a codependent relationship. And I really liked how when you mentioned that how the end, I like that sense of moving on. But it's not just moving on. It's like taking those first steps of healing, and you know where you're no longer stuck in the mud with that person. And I really like this. It's beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. I like what you were saying about the mud swinging, too. I never thought of that because, like, that's so true of these kinds of people who are miserable. Oftentimes, then, you know, it is with words that are just so negative that they continue to drag people down to their level. But I didn't get that connection. I like it. Well, next up we have a poem by Paralyzed Fox. And I will go ahead and give this a read. And this is called Till There's Nothing Left. A sliver of skin rips from myself. I take the knife from the upper shelf, skimming the blade through each skinny hair. The blood within mixes with the purified air. Drip drop down my white, pale arm. From the look of it, I enjoy much harm, able to see clearly tons of hard bone, My heart is broken like pebbles from a stone. Tears fall down my colorless face, unable to see the light between all this black space, chopping away the person I am, looking like a beet red Hannaford ham. Piles of memories splatter on the floor. Agony and loss block my bedroom door. All the pain I once contained is hopefully being drained. I lay upon my comfortable bed and picture the horror that I just bled. It's cold within these shattered walls. My happiness feels so very small. I heavily walk to the bathroom sink. The mirror is melting just like ink. I stare at the person on the other side. She's just bone with little to no pride. End poem. And Pam, will you start us off with this one?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, this one definitely hits hard. Paralyzed Fox is another one I don't think I've ever seen before. So I hope we get to read more of them. I like how she took the inspiration from that famous Van Gogh painting, a skeleton with a cigarette, and she turned it into a message about self-harm. And, you know, it's one of those topics that can be so difficult to write about. But, you know, as I always say, that's part of the gift of being a poet is the fact that we can write about those difficult subjects like self-harm and cutting, and you know, somebody else will read this and feel it and relate to it and know that somebody else relates to them. And I like how she titles this, Till There's Nothing Left, because I think the whole idea to me is of just wanting to not yet physically, but almost emotionally tearing yourself apart along with the cutting, you know, trying to rid yourself of those memories. And I really like piles of memories splatter on the floor, agony and loss block my bedroom door. And agony and loss block my bedroom door is really just a line that grabs at my heart, because oftentimes when a child, a teenager is cutting or somebody is cutting, it's behind those closed doors, and they don't want to let anybody else in. I was also really struck with the imagery of chopping away the person I am, looking like a beet red Hannaford ham. Now, I don't know what exactly a Hannaford ham is, like if it's a brand, I will say that the idea of represent like a ham representing the flesh is very visceral. Plus, it gives thought to the whole idea of perhaps somebody who feels like they're treated like a piece of meat. Perhaps there is a sense of being used for sex, and not feeling love and not feeling that sense of pride in yourself. This is a beautiful and powerful write and very well done.
Wow, really good comment, Pam. I like that because I honestly, there's some parts of a poem that if I don't like immediately connect it with anything, I almost forget about it. Like I kind of like would skip away from that part without really like trying to bring it into the context of the rest of the write. So I really like the connection you got with that. I think this is a really cool piece. I think with the self-harm, it can work on two levels, because I agree with what you were saying about, you know, the just taking it on face value, like how intense that is. But I also feel like in this write, I'm almost reading it more as a metaphor. Definitely self-harm, but this kind of gore and the bones showing through and stuff like that, it's so over the top that it's almost making me feel like it's about the self-harm that we do to ourselves internally. You know, exposing those bones, kind of cutting away all of the pretensions that we gather around ourselves to protect ourselves from really looking at what's beneath. And then in the end, staring at the person in the mirror, she's just bone with little to no pride. You know, like you're one huge exposed nerve, completely bare. After you've gone through all these memories and the pain and the loss and just kind of tormented yourself with it. And I relate to that that sort of internal self-harm quite a bit, of kind of raking yourself over the coals and being unable to forgive yourself, really. That's what I got from it.
I like that. I really like how you see it as the metaphor, and I definitely has opened my eyes to that thought, that whole idea, like, as you mentioned, opening yourself up, that raw nerve, that, you know, trying to dig away the deeper hurt. Really great observation there.
Thanks, Pam. And now I have a piece by Mad Lad, and I would love for you to give that a read for us.
Okie dokie, Smokey. I tell you, Mad Lad is one of those that I kind of wish, I don't know what his voice sounds like, but I feel like his poetry would probably be really good in his own voice because it's so unique.
Yeah, I so agree. I don't know. I love his poetry so much. And, like, I don't know. You're so right. I think the beauty of having the writer actually read their own piece is that you don't miss anything of their intent. And he's just got so much packed into every poem that it would be cool for him to get us a recording. So if you're listening to this, Mad Lad, this is your hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
There you go. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. All right. And this is You Don't Have to Call It Love, Honey by Mad Lad. And it goes like this. I stand here naked, a matchstick between my teeth and a cigar between my thighs as freedom's unseen scarf slithers round my neck, tightening its knot. 1,000 unfed rats snifflick bite my nourishment-rich flesh stand. Please wash my dead hairs with gunpowder, fellow comrades, and let my nails prick into the eyes of every unexplored bombshell. And always remember that ideas may be lazy, but the woman who birds them is not. There are more intestines shrinking from a meal's absence than lungs choking from the factory's dispel, or maybe the number's the same. But statistics are a greater threat to champions than to his worshippers. So revising the theory of individuality, we may conclude that the cyberpunks with screwed-in prosthetic knees are the anchor around the ankle of our economic constellation, while music's corpse gasps for the voice of the undead within television's four corners. I snuggle in a quick shower, a moment's monsoon in the bathroom solstice, then towel on shoulder come out flaunting the bald patches below my waist. You smile between two pimples. Now, let's not forget that this is not a love poem. Don't try to mock a mimicry, hey? Great, yeah, something like that. Two me's crying can't displace one crying meme or blah, blah, blah. There is no absolute in this universe, and if you show me one, I'll call it an exception. Audit in your areola, you call a passion wreckedly over a spiked rug and unholy serpent goddess, stretching out her pubes, twanging the ancient most melody out of rising sperm burnt burnt fumes. But darling, in what colors does the mirror scream to the bomb blinds? I chug in a peg of petrol and watch the shadows pick themselves up from the ground off the walls and escort the chosen virgin lamb to an over-decorated altar for its final sacrifice, Daddy, serve the same fallacy. So where do you want the limit to make an appearance where its function has been exhausted? End poem.
Wow.
Are you there? Oh, okay.
I'm here. I had to wow real quick. I had to do an Owen Wilson wow.
Right.
I feel like every section of that I was trying to catch on to say something about. As you're moving on to the next one, you get caught up in that because talk about intense. I feel like there are some poems that kind of rise and fall with intensity, but this one really just keeps kind of ramping up and throwing things at you that you totally aren't expecting. I don't know. There's so much meaning you could gather from this. So on the one hand, there's a lot of imagery in this that you could just sit and listen to it and let it roll into your mind, these images. And it's definitely visceral from the very beginning on. I like the concept of the beginning as freedom's unseen scarf slithers around my neck, tightening its knot. A thousand unfed rats sniff, lick, bite my nourishment-rich flesh stand. I really like as freedom's unseen scarf slithers around my neck, tightening its knot, because and then paired with the rats, because it seemed to me, if you're talking about freedom's unseen scarf, the unseen bondage that comes with freedom, the inability to actually figure out what your choice should be. If you have complete freedom, your choices are infinite. And I think that's what I was getting from the thousand unfed rats trying to sniff, lick, bite. The thousand unfed rats to me are all of the possibilities that are lost. I guess Richard Brautigan said finding is losing something else. And that's kind of what I'm getting from that. There's so many different ways to go. And then there seems to be in the next stanza down, this kind of idea that, I don't know. There's like a violence that comes in with the gunpowder and the comrades. And then every unexplored bombshell is still bringing me back to that idea of yeah, I don't know. And then this is going to be a long comment, but I'm trying to think of what I was wanting to say about the sections as they were coming, but it's hard not to just kind of get lost in reading it again, because there's just so much to it. Statistics are a greater threat to champions than to his worshipers. I like that as well, because there's this idea, in the beginning of, you know, there's more people dying from hunger than you know, these other factors. But when you're trying to get people rallied behind a cause, you need to get people riled up about it. You don't want the cold, hard fact of the matter coming in. And really, in today's world, you know, if you're trying to get people mobilized to fight against, you know, animal cruelty, say, or a factory or an industry that's bad for the environment. If you start to actually look at the cold hard facts of what human suffering is going on throughout the world, your one cause sort of starts to pale in comparison, and it becomes less and less pressing and important. And really, what it makes you devolve into is pessimism. Complete pessimism towards the future in general, because it seems like all of these things that need to be solved, if you look at them at big picture wise, they're completely overwhelming. Yeah, I don't know if I'm completely off of what he probably intended to mean with that. And there's a lot of absolutely intense imagery throughout. So I do have to appreciate just on that level as well. But yeah, I think those are the kind of the thoughts that I had with the first few sections. And what about you, Pam? What did you think?
Well, first of all, I think that was a beautifully intense comment. And you're right, it is, you get lost in his poetry. And this poem, it does have intense imagery. Where it opens up, I stand here naked, a matchstick between my teeth and a cigar between my thighs. There's almost a violent sexuality in those lines, but it makes me think of the matchstick girls from the Victorian era. And there's almost to me a sense of a feminism within those lines of the using of women and girls throughout history. The interesting thing, probably not related to the poem, but I just thought of it, is there's actually places in the world where rats are worshipped, and there are towns where they're not allowed to kill the rats because they're seen as a holy animal. And so because they're not allowed to kill them, these cities become run over by the rats. And, and I think that would actually work really well as a kind of a metaphor for the whole idea that if you can't rid yourself of those people, those in power who are those rats running over your freedoms, then, what does that leave you? I always know like his poetry has a deeper message, and I definitely very rarely get it, but I like how this brings up the statistics. And as you had mentioned, I thought that was a really good thought about how, oftentimes you throw like out those statistics when you want people to listen to you, to follow your side. The problem is that every Yahoo on the internet has a statistic, and you just never, you have to be very careful about your research. And I think the fact that he mentions that there are more intestines shrinking from the meals, abstinence, and lungs choking from the factory of the spell, what that really speaks to me of are people who, and obviously this isn't everyone, but perhaps, go overboard with the whole idea of, going green. And it's like, okay, you want to go green, but you're taking away functioning jobs. I also, he has this way of just turning, like there's this sharp pivot where he says, you smile between two pimples, and you just think of youthful yet imperfect love. And then all of a sudden he goes, now let's not forget that this is not a love poem, because he very much wants to bring you back into the reality of the moment, I like that he ends this with the whole idea of the sacrificial lamb, that sacrifice that we all offer up, perhaps the sacrifice that the poor offer up, so that the rich can live well. And, that I love the cleverness of, yes, Daddy, serve the same fallacy. On one hand, it makes me think, of a whole idea of a sexual domination, but it actually very much, again, and this is going to be an odd thought, but it makes me think of Daddy Warbucks from the musical Annie, and how oftentimes, those who shouldn't be saviors act like they are, and throwing out scraps to the little orphans of the world when what they could be doing is offering them up jobs. But anyways, that's just my rambling thoughts on the whole thing. And hopefully I can put you to sleep.
I thought
this was an excellent poem and very well done.
No, absolutely. I thought that was an excellent comment. I actually like that reference you threw in at the end, because I haven't watched that movie, or I've only seen the movie. I haven't seen the performance of it, but I think, I don't know, I like that you brought that in. I was going to say, too, that I neglected, because I had, like, such a tangle of thoughts, and I neglected to talk about how, in the end, so where do you want limit to make an appearance where its function's been exhausted? I think that is a I'm still going to stick with my kind of interpretation that this is a criticism of idealism itself, and it shows, you know, where the ideals that we hold, you know, they don't translate into reality. And love, you're right. He says this isn't a love poem, and there is this idea in that part with the lamb, where the lamb is being sacrificed on an over-decorated altar. I kind of feel like now reading it again, listening to your comment and kind of going with my interpretation, that like the over-decorated altar is that ideal that we have of what love should be or what, you know, sex really should be. I don't know. Now I'm rambling
again,
too, because I thought I had something wrapped up tight to say, but it just didn't happen. It's a really cool
poem.
Well,
you know, it's not like he has wrapped up tight poetry. He plays a lot with spacing and wordplay and phrasing. So you don't – I really think to read Mad Lad's poetry, which in itself is not wrapped up tightly, it's really you can't ask of yourself to have a comment that's wrapped up tightly.
That is true. I didn't think about that. Yeah. So now that if you're going to write sprawling rights, just be prepared to have sprawling responses.
Exactly.
All right. Well, excellent comments. You know, I think maybe we might be the only two people that can have a show with just us two discussing poetry and still go over the time limit that we probably should have for each poem.
Probably. But nothing better too much time than too little.
Yes, that's very, very true. Okay, well, next up, I am going to read a piece by Hughes Face. And this is called 2010-2020. Hands up, and as that of the fateful faithfuls, of the fateful faithfuls, grinding, clocking, and anti-clocking the radio miles. Yes, we stand still in steel on a stiff, resolute accord against ritual of grisly government force brutalizing us. Wandering, pondering over overweight shoulders, sculling our schools over a pristine strand of pendulum displaced in space, grounded on cold-blooded ground, unsettled on focal crosspoint. They borrow, we burrow. A window bangs along signpost, flip-flops windwardly. A sack of flag flaps and batters stewardly, then bows. They say we bark aloud, hence the fingered works, happy triggers of live and military-grade ammunition. The center spot is morgue shot, splotched in a burst. Behind is my chest, riddled in Cupid lies and lost love, muffed off the mouth with muffled touch of distrust. On a human manure and blood-irrigated homeland. Justice for the just was our unjust call. On parole, herdsmen, romance our darlings, hands on gun poles, stationed we are on execution ground snipe posts, at Lecky Tollgate, use fireworks into candlelights. End poem. And Pam, what do you think about this?
Well, first of all, great read there, Mika. You know, a poem like this, you know, makes me realize just how difficult and it must be to live amongst such violence. I like that he, and I'm guessing at this, but what I'm guessing is that the title is the date at which this event, this shooting happened. And, you know, this it flows, and it definitely has an intensity to it. And I appreciate that he put in his AN information about what was going on. And this is strong all the way through. But I appreciate I really appreciate wandering, pondering over overweighted shoulders, sculling our skull of a pristine strand of pendulum, displaced in space, grounded on cold-blooded ground, unsettled on focal crosspoint. They borrow, we burrow. I like how that makes the point of people being used and abused. And also on a technical level, there's some really great inner rhyme on in there. Justice for the just was out, unjust, call on parole. I feel like Q-Face probably writes some really just strong, hard-hitting raps. Ending lines, it just reminds us that those candle lights, those candles that are lit in memory, are often done so after the snipers, after the gunfire, after the violence and the blood has been spilled. And there's just a real somberness to this piece. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, that was an excellent comment, Pam. I like that part that you were talking about too there, that use fireworks into candlelights, like their lives turn into just those memorial candles that we know. It's cool how he plays with those concepts, because he does that in a couple different ways. The youth snuffed out and then becoming in candlelight. I think, I don't know, the way that he plays with the fingered works being the fingers pulling the triggers, I think, I don't know, is really cool turn of phrase as well. And a lot of this, it's kind of hard to read out loud because there's almost a sense of like a tongue twister in some parts because of the way he repeats certain sounds within the lines. You were talking about the internal rhyme, which I think is really cool, but also it's really cool because usually when someone repeats the same word, especially within the same line, or like a very, very similar word, it can seem repetitive, but in this, it doesn't. It's got like it makes it more intense, like sculling our skulls over. Like there's this emphasis that's put on these grounded on cold-blooded ground. It's very purposeful that he's doing that, muffed off the mouth with muffled touch of distrust. So I think just like technically, like the writing is super, super interesting. The style that I haven't read anything quite like this before. I was also going to say that I think it's cool that he put the information in the AN as well, because as I was reading it, and this might show just how like America-centric my thinking is, but I was thinking that this could work as a critique of Black people's experience in the U.S. And I didn't even think about the I'm completely unaware of this whole. I had no idea because I'm kind of preoccupied with the things that are affecting me in the here and now. And honestly, these experiences, they translate. Like every country seems like is having to fight against the same sort of the violence, the oppression. It's crazy. I don't know. I really like on a human manure and blood irrigated homeland. Like that line just brings in the weight of the history. Blood irrigated homeland. It's just, I don't know, very, very hard hitting. I think it's an incredible poem.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this happened on October 20th, 2020. And 12 people, peaceful protesters, were shot and killed.
Wow.
It's very sad, yeah.
To read this on this show, I think this definitely fits with the intense imagery. There's just some heavy messages in a lot of these poems tonight.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Well, next up, I have a poem by Fantail. And if you don't mind reading that for us, Pam.
I would be happy to. And this is Laid to Rest by Fantail. And it goes like this. Sorrows hidden in somber shadows of the twilight hours slowly creep through dimly lit streets in the necropolis of eternal sleep, where visions fade as evening mist drifts over crooked headstones, shrouding dead flowers drooping in floral vessels atop neglected graves to elaborate mausoleums of disguised miseries, where inside marble-lined crypts stand giant amphora vases overflowing with bouquets of grandeur beside altars adorned with silver candelabras, their soft mood lighting reflecting hope in Jesus' stained glass windows, while buried deep in the catacombs of slumber rests one's dreams and poem.
Wow, this is a really beautiful poem. I like that, you know, again, we were talking in the beginning about the different interpretations people had of intense imagery. And a lot of the intensity of the poems that we've been reading is it's intense in a very kind of gritty way, or intense in meaning, it bearing a lot of weight behind the images. And in this, it really is like a painting. You know, it's intense because of how deeply you're immersed in the way that this cemetery looks. There's a lot of shape poetry going on, which is really cool too. But I really liked shrouding dead flowers drooping in floral vessels, because a floral vessels, of course, I think, you know, it's talking about the vases that these flowers, you know, are in that have been left. But something about floral vessels is making me think of like those points in your blood vessels or in your veins that kind of like branch all out. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's just the image that arose in my mind while I was reading it. But yeah, I think the ending especially is really beautiful. Rest one's dreams. Cause it evokes, that Hamlet quote of to sleep perchance to dream. And there's kind of a misty otherworldly kind of tone to this. Even though, you know, what's being described is pretty clear. It's a cemetery. It has a certain air to it. It's like an Edgar Allan Poe atmosphere. I liked it. And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful comment there. You're right. It does have a very misty and ethereal type quality to it. And I like how she describes the imagery of, as she says, San Felipe, Chile, founded in 1740. Thoughts on visiting their cemetery in 2020. And I like how this is her thoughts about visiting the cemetery, but it's also her thoughts on death itself. Like she mentions the shrouding dead flowers drooping in floral vases atop neglected graves, and then the giant amphora vases overflowing with bouquets of grandeur. So she sees that there are those who died and were buried and forgotten, those whose graves aren't replaced with fresh flowers. And then she sees those who's overflowing with bouquets of grandeur. And what this poem reminds us, that it doesn't matter what kind of bouquets you get at your grave, you know, to the dead themselves, you know. Everyone dies. It doesn't matter if you're the rich, you're poor. In the end, death, meets us all. And I do have to say, you know, like there is kind of a beautiful intensity to visiting an old historical building or cemetery. There's something that really just captures your attention and brings you into the quietness and the meditativeness of the moment. And I really like how she even opens with that idea of sorrows hidden in somber shadows of the twilight hours. And I like how she plays around with the spacing of her words, like spaces out the word slowly. I thought that was just a really great touch for the poem, and it's excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. I so agree. And great read too, Pam. We're really killing it with comments tonight. I'm telling you, I really appreciate that you're here with me because, I don't know, you get a lot of depth out of the poems. I appreciate your
try. Well, the great thing is we both, you know, although we have our things that we think the same about, a lot of times we kind of have things that we think, and so I think by having two minds that kind of differently at times, you know, it gives a chance to see different perspectives of how people would see your poem. So,
yeah, absolutely. I say that too, like, especially with you and Rex, like, it's fun to read a poem and have kind of your interpretation or your thoughts that come to your mind when reading it. But then once I hear you comment or Rex comment, I have like this whole other filter. And so I get to look at the poem through multiple lenses. And that's what I love about these shows the most.
Oh, yes, definitely. I have to agree.
So next up, we have a piece that is going to take us into a very different kind of tone. And this is a really fun piece. I really like this. So this is by Paul Brott, and it's called Thinker Fashion Show. Yes, you're right. It's Pink Flamingo, not your average thinker bimbo. A look that says, why not try me? Stirs a smile like a dry martini. A frequent winner of fashion tournaments, categories including lawn ornaments, colors blending, glows fantastic. Hard to tell, it's mostly plastic. Paddle boaters love this outfit. Gets lover's vote, no doubt about it. Jewels dangle from this one's neck, from front lawn glitter for your backyard deck. Bring your big bucks to this auction. Pinkies sold in large proportions. There was something in the air that night. The stars were bright. Flamingo. First bid. End poem. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. I really enjoy Paul Brott's poetry, but I have to say, I think this is one of my favorites. And I just, I love the humor in it. But I think within the humor, there's also that message of the ridiculousness of some fashion, you know, the kind of fashion that you see going down the runway that would just never work for real life. And, you know, and it's not just the well-off, the famous that do that. I mean, have you ever looked and seen, like, how they have crocheted shorts for men? And you're thinking, okay, there are just some things that should not be crocheted and worn. You know, and I like the phrase, not your average finker bimbo. And I like how this mocks the whole idea of how people will try to outbid each other for that fashion, that item that would make no sense in the real world. So just absolutely a fun and clever write and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like what you're saying about the message of it, because I totally agree. And I thought the message was not just about the ridiculousness of fashion, but it feels like the ridiculousness of culture's obsession with appearance in general. Because, like, when he says it's mostly plastic, hard to tell it's mostly plastic, I felt like that kind of had a double meaning, because it's not just an outfit that's mostly plastic. When you look at, like, a fashion model, like, it's almost like he's talking about, like, people who are obsessed with plastic surgery, or, like, you know, so obsessed with standing out that they will go to lengths that make them almost unrecognizable.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That is a really great point there. And you're right, it does seem to touch on the whole idea of how much people are obsessed with their looks and with plastic surgery.
Yeah, right. A bit, and like not just a personal obsession, but the societal obsession with seeing only what's new, what's perfect. I don't know.
Yep.
Emile Calvet, let me post it up, and then will you give that a read for us?
Sure will. And just let me see it. I might have to refresh. Oh, there it is. All right. Figment Tree by Emile Calvet. Okay, is it Calvet or Calvet? I suppose it must be Calvet.
Oh, I have no idea.
We have no idea. We apologize. Emile Calvet. And it goes like this. The tree of my figments stands small in the forest among the proudest boles, the weirdest of fruit trees overcast by the shade of their towering height. Alien and unworldly, but garden in itself, just one droplet of light enshrined in morning dew can make it bloom and shine under dim canopies, kin to compass roses splayed out over marble from yonder overseas. Its quivering vessels are ready to set sail and fly all their colors, wayward children of chance. They smashed the hourglass, broken every compass, spurring on the straggler, the reclining whistler, to follow Ulysses. End poem.
Oh, great read, Pam. I like this piece. I like the way that it's figment tree, because the figments immediately clue you into figment of my imagination. And I think it's, you know, to me, it's pretty clear this is talking about the imagination, especially in that last stanza, smashing the hourglass, breaking the compass, spurring on the straggler, the reclining whistler, you know, the you that isn't out doing and facing responsibilities and, you know, making dinner, cleaning, doing the laundry, whatever, like all of the practical shit that we have to do just to have, you know, a normal life. And this isn't for that version of you. This is for the straggler that sits whistling and thinking of all the possibilities, following Ulysses, you know, able to transport into a completely fantastical place. I really, really like that. And smashing the hourglass and breaking the compass is cool because it's not bound by time. It's not bound by location. So there's some really cool imagery to this, but also I just really like the concept in that last stanza. It's my favorite. And what do you think, Pam?
Well, I have to agree that the whole concept of this, of using your imagination and the importance of it, you know, and it's just absolutely wonderful. And I like how it starts out, the tree of my figments stand small in the forest among the proudest boles, the weirdest of fruit trees. You know, it's almost like this acknowledgement of that part of yourself that you know, it has fun, it, you know, has those weird and strange thoughts. And because it describes the tree as standing small, and it is a tree of figments of imagination, it's almost like there's this holding back of self, of holding back of thoughts. And as it goes on, there's really this kind of like pushing yourself out of the box, you know, expanding the depths of your thinking. There's almost a sense of the freedom of not worrying what people will think about your poetry, about your thoughts, if you share them. And I like how that he reminds us that it, you know, like it was from imagination that, you know, the story of Ulysses was written, You know, and it's from imagination oftentimes that poetry and stories and art comes from. And you know, we just, as poets, as artists, we have that opportunity to expand our own horizons and expand other people's as well. So, wonderful write and very well done.
Oh, that was such a good comment. I really like that idea of not caring what people think about your poetry. I don't know, that because I was thinking, oh, you know, not caring, you know, all these weights that you have to carry, letting those go for a minute. But, like, the weight of what others will think is what I think maybe the hardest to let go. I really like that. We have Felon with us. Felonious, welcome.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Glad you could join us.
I come for the party.
Awesome.
You've made it to the secret meeting of the coven.
Yeah.
I
didn't get to hear the last one. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. I saw you got on a little after, so that's cool. I did post another piece by Secret, so I'm going to give that one a read, and then we'll get your piece up.
Okay.
This piece, and I'm glad you're here to comment on this song, because I think you'll like this. So this piece is called Crotch. I awaken like a crotch boiled in the devil's spilt coffee, black as charred manna, smeared with the Judas jelly, that shivers at silver spoons, an accidental tea bagging in a room full of crumpets and corseted cunt bags and gag reflexes, still begging for more rope. And the sun sambas me, this Chiquita banana woman with a bruised yellow smile, her hat spilling the sewage of maggot fruit and flies that spit on God offerings. Yet I hover and buzz over the honey of her breast, my eyes falling like coins and gold plates at the sermon of her lips. But my baby teeth are sunk and swallowed within the Christmas dough, balled and rolled into Halloween ovens, and I am carved and pitted, pale orange smile, by the grinning demons growing in the pumpkin patch. So eat me in between bites of dry air and gulps of void wine, for I am like neutered notes vomited out by bulimic pianos, the faint flutter of red curtains, the echo of nervous gongs, and a verb that can swallow only potential energy. It has come to my attention that somewhere dirty street urchins bathed in a lemon light are still selling roses, as sweet as God's name. That evening, Mary called him home for a supper that did not pass out menus of his own broken boy flesh and printed in the red ink of his pure blood. So do not mind the Yeti snores, the yanking of winter blankets, and the dreaming of cages far from today's zoo, as I sleep like a crotch, unmolested by hands or shadows. And by morning will yawn over polished porcelain and piss out the minerals of a newer sun. End poem.
Damn.
I know. Why don't you start us off, Belle?
This is bringing imagery to the table. This should be right up your alley, because I mean it can mean a lot of things. But that first stanza. To me, is like, you know, you have all these little, you know, snitty people, you know, whatever. And it reminds me of a fly that maybe is flying around the room and he's checking everybody out. And he just dumps his nuts in their tea and stuff. And he's calling them cunt bags. And he just keeps going. And then he goes into where the Chiquita banana lady, the hat and everything. Still, that reminds me of a fly just coming to life with the maggots and such. Even though people think they're grander than they are, and yet, you know, the fly still rises above it. But then when it goes into, so eat me, and that to me, it still reminds me of the fly, but yet it comes to me thinking of a stench. I mean, this could mean so many different things, but really it just means, you know what, sometimes a crotch can be good, sometimes a crotch could just be stinking. I mean, it's nasty, you don't want to touch it. So just wow, I'm just blown by, I've got to dissect this a little bit more, because this is a lot to take in. But very thought-provoking.
Oh, yeah, I so agree. Excellent comment, Phil. And Pam, what about you?
Oh, wow. I tell you, this is just, it's intense. Yeah, I really like, I mean, the whole thing is great, but it's black as charred manna smeared with the Judas jelly that shivers at silver spoons and accidental teabagging. And then in a room full of crumpets and corseted cunt bags. There's really just, you know, to me, this sense of betrayal. There's almost within those lines a betrayal of what sex is supposed to be, and, you know, an offering of love and enjoyment. A sense of being physically used. I think it's interesting how there's references to fruit, you know, with the smiles, a bruised yellow smile, a pale orange smile. That those parts actually remind me of the way of the colors of a bruise change as healing is happening. Then it has come to my attention that somewhere dirty street urchins bathed in the lemon light are still selling roses as sweet as God's name. What that part makes me think of is that oftentimes to find true, honest, you know, spirituality that is not self-servicing, you have to go to those that people would consider the lowliest, you know, the ones whose life is so haunting, so dark, that all they really have is the faith within their heart, and, you know, for themselves, and not because, you know, it makes money for some, you know, huge mega church. But those are just my thoughts. I think it's a wonderfully layered rite that I am sure like 20 different people could look at this and come up with 20 different thoughts. But it's definitely very well done and intense imagery.
Oh, yeah. Excellent comment, Pam. I really like where you're going with that. I actually completely agree with this idea of the idea of what sex should be and the reality of what it is. But I also got this kind of related to that, the overwhelming theme of the loss of innocence. And that could come along with, you know, being exposed to the reality of what sex can be without love. But also there's this sense of you were saying the betrayal of that realization, but I feel like there's almost even a betrayal that is about loss of innocence too soon. I awaken like a crotch boiled in the devil's spilt coffee, which is, first of all, great imagery, but black is charred manna. And manna being, food from heaven, presence from heaven, but charred, it's ash in the mouth. It's nothing. And he brings in Judas in the very next line, Judas jelly. And then it turns into this, you know, pretty graphic kind of sexual imagery, but not, but all out of context. But these words, the teabagging, cut bags, gag reflexes, and begging for more rope are all bringing in this very violent idea of sex. And I think there's, in my mind, there's definitely sexual violence there. But the awakening, like a crotch, is interesting, the choice of that, because, you know, whether or not you experience like a sexual abuse or something like that, there is an awakening if you have never felt anything like that, for awakening of the possibility of the idea of sexuality. And in that first stanza, it's so wrong. That awakening is so wrong. It's covered in imagery that's just very viscerally negative. And then in the second stanza, that awakening becomes this willingness to hover and buzz over the honey of her breast, of this woman that is spilling sewage and maggot fruit and flies, spitting on God offerings. And I think that is very interesting because, if you're exposed to sex in a bad way or too early, that your perception of what is good and what is bad can be completely turned on its head. And my eyes falling like coins in gold plates at the sermon of her lips. I really like that kind of reference to tithing. And I apologize to anyone religious, but to me, you know, churches being the tax-free kind of places that they are, it's very, I think a sermon to me kind of evokes a sense of a false promise, of false hopes, of something that you can, that's there to kind of pull those coins from your hands into the gold plates, and you're paying for a farce. And that's kind of what's going on there. Like, he's giving parts of himself for the sermon of her lips, tithing his tithes. But he immediately says, my baby teeth are sunk and swallowed within the Christmas dough. There's this child, the sense of childhood with the Christmas being evoked and the Halloween being evoked, where both of those holidays are suddenly being perverted. And I think that to me is talking about the perversion of your normal childhood, the Halloween pumpkins becoming the grinning demons growing. And then there's, in the next stanza, this complete sense of emptiness, of resignation, eaten even between bites of dry air and gulps of void wine. Like, there's nothing here. Neutered notes really speaks to, you know, to being almost, as a person, being kind of eviscerated by this experience, which is so negative. And a verb that can unswallow only potential energy, I really like that as well, because it's like you could appreciate the idea of sex, but only the potential. And the act of it itself has become something empty, has become something that actually is void wine, which is such a cool phrase as well. It doesn't actually do anything for you. It has nothing for you. And then in the next stanza, you know, you were talking about this as well, Pam, but like there are still street urchins in a lemon light selling roses as sweet as God's name. Like, there still really is a hope. And there is innocence still somewhere in the world, I feel like, is what's being said there. And that part about Jesus being called him by Mary and having a supper that did not pass out menus of his own broken boy flesh, I really like that as well, because it's like somewhere there's a family that doesn't pass out menus of broken boy flesh. It's not like there's a way to have sustenance without giving so much of yourself that you're harming yourself. I don't know. I'm kind of losing what I was trying to say is not coming across the way I wanted to. But yeah, that's kind of where I came at the poem. And I really, really think that this completely embodies intense imagery, because no matter what meaning is actually intended, I think there's no one who's going to read this that isn't like completely overwhelmed by the images that are thrown at you in this piece.
I have to say that was beautiful. Yeah, exactly. Damn, that was a beautiful and intense comment. And I really just enjoyed listening to you delve into that poem.
Yeah, I agree, Tam.
Thanks, you guys. I was telling you.
I can make it know it all.
No, it's just that, you know, we don't have a lot of people on here to discuss, but we're still getting like a lot of really cool discussion, because we're the people to be commenting on pieces when it's kind of
I love when you break things down. It just brings a different perspective to what, you know, some people think, and you really explain that very well, and I like that. I mean, I enjoy that part of your comments.
Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome.
I appreciate both of you guys a lot. But I will put up your piece next, Phil, and if you wouldn't mind reading that for us.
Okay, I read that y'all were having like a thing about this imagery or whatever, so I wrote this like, what, 16 minutes ago? So it's called Eating Seconds. Flesh of fresh feeding frenzy, leaves beneath bones begging, screaming silently and slowly stuttering stop. Existence echoes era, era, over opportunities opening, Reality rings, regrets rain, left lingering life's lullabies. Torments test the true tomorrow. Counting collects casualties' corpse, while wounds whisper, why would we win? End point.
Damn, fella. You're always coming in with these last-minute writes. I love it. I don't know how you can write something like this in such a short time, but I don't know. I just have to do one of those little bowing emojis, like, you are worthy. that first stanza, flesh of fresh feeding frenzy. What a cool opening line. I love that. Flesh of fresh feeding frenzy bleeds beneath bones begging. And because you've alliterated all of that and then continue that throughout the poem, it's such a cool, like, I like alliteration, but I don't think it's really taken to this extent in a lot of poems I read. And so it's really nice because it's something fresh. And it's, that beginning is almost like a tongue twister, but in a good way. And the flesh of fresh feeding frenzy is just such a cool phrase in general. And I think, I don't know, a lot of your pieces, when I read them, I'm overwhelmed in that sense of, like, you, your struggles, it never being over. It's constant. It's, you know, you, torments test the true tomorrow. I like that because what I mean is it's never something that you overcome. It's like you dive back in the next day or whatever. These poems come about like almost like a small respite where you're able to look back and say, oh, this is what I've been doing. And then you just go right back into the fray. And the wounds whispering, why would we win, is a really cool ending. I'm not sure I completely was able to gather the meaning behind it. But I don't know. I really like the idea of that. Wounds whisper, why would we win?
Well, thank you.
And what did you think?
Did you say my name?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I kind of had caught something in my throat when I was saying your name, though. So it was more like, well,
okay.
You think of it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This is just, as always, hard-hitting, powerful. You know, that whole, yeah, definitely agree. I'm not worthy. The way you just whip these thoughts up so quickly, it just, you know, and wonderful alliteration. I really like screaming silently and slowly, stuttering stop, existence echoes, error, error. I like how you, that it's that whole idea of suddenly realizing, you know, like the idea that choices made, you know, of not slowing down to enjoy life, and all of a sudden it's that halting stop of, wait a minute, this isn't working. Torment tests the true tomorrow, counting collects casualty corpse, wounds whisper, why would we win? I think it's really intriguing and thought-provoking that you add, you know, that you end with a question, you know, why would we win? And, you know, to me that makes me think of how oftentimes we expect winning to be part of our life, like as a natural reward, you know, and yet it rains on the innocent as well as the guilty, you know. So really, I mean, your ability to create layered metaphors and a brevity that give much food for thought is definitely a talent you have. So,
well, thank you.
Very well done, Helen.
Thank you. I was just saying that basically time doesn't stop for anybody, no matter what. You know, we all become casualties to seconds, and when sometimes we just want time to stop, and yet no matter how much we scream that suddenly stop, you know, it's not. It still keeps raining. The seconds keep coming and coming and coming, and life keeps going. I mean, you know, it just keeps singing along, and it torments us sometimes. At the same time, it collects those who are weak, which is the casualties, and the wounds are that of what the bruising, the battered of being. Tested against time, but yet it whispered, do you think you're going to win and stop me? I don't think so. So that's what I meant by it.
I like that. Very cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, I love when you're here to read your own pieces and then to, like, give us, like, the insights behind them. Thanks, Don.
You're welcome.
All right. Next up, we have a poem by Pam. And would you mind giving that a read for us, Pam?
I will be happy to. And this is 80 by Tam, and it goes like this. She could taste insecurity between the bars, yawning piano, and strings of desperate smoke rising into the mouths of blue basket chandeliers, spitting skeletons of intentions, flossing last calls, teeth, and poem.
Oh.
Yeah, great read, Pam. And Felon, why don't you start us off on this one?
I love this. It's a nice little brevity, 30 words. Basically, she's saying she could taste the insecurity. That's because she's chasing that last, you know, it's the last call's coming up, and she only has that last little bit of time to find somebody in their deepest misery to trap them into her Venus flytrap for the night so she can have her way with them. So she's just going around. It's like this smoky, jazzy bar, but yet, you know, the lights are blue, the chandeliers that hang down, and yet flossing last call's teeth means she's going, let me pick out which one I want. So this is, I love this. This is very, very tastefully done and very metaphorical. Like it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really taken by the last couple lines, spitting skeletons of intentions, flossing last call's teeth. I really like that flossing last call's teeth because it's like the end of the night when the bar is about to close, and if you're that desperate person, you know, strings of desperate smoke, like that just needs somebody so that you're not alone for the night. Flossing last call's teeth is like a pretty cool metaphor. Is like picking up whatever is left over, whatever is left between, you know, the last call, you know, I don't know, whatever person would be willing almost at that point. But it's such a cool phrase. I find it incredible the way that these poets come up with to describe these situations. I don't know. It's just really fun to read. I love that. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like this. I like how she tells us an epic tale in the 30 words. You know, it's very much reminds me of that, what is that style called? I'm going to totally blank out. Noir. It very much, you know, like, usually noir writes are longer, but obviously she had to write for a contest limit. But it has that feel to it. And I like that she uses the character's name as the title because that really connects us more personally with the character that she has a name. But what I find really interesting about that, I have to agree, though, that ending line really just was strong. But I like that she opens up with she could taste insecurity. There's almost this idea of that woman, that spider that, you know, hunts and looks for the insecure man that she knows that she can take advantage of, that she knows, you know, that like almost a sense of looking for that next victim, that next hunt. I find it, there's almost a real, like, dark intensity to it. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that, too, you're saying about the noir atmosphere. Great comment. Okay. Next up, we have a poem by David Meyerhoff, and I will give this a read. And, good night, Felon. Oh, wait, I thought you were saying you were going to bed. No, you're just hugging. Sorry.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay. So this poem is by David Meyerhoff, and I will give it a read. It's called A Powerful Image. The little girl owned few items without family in a war-ravaged zone with decay as livings. Living off the streets and the charity of those without more than her, the days passed. With a youthful smile, she felt gratitude towards whatever could benefit her. Pain at seeing the hell of others, her own being buried deep inside, out of reach. A life without paucity, but ennobled by the joy of just living with more equanimity than those in mansions, eating, drinking, and laughing their fill. Along came a stranger, tattered and bruised, befriending the little girl, not yet 10 years, but over 80 in sage. She begins to draw close and value his nobility of life, while he cries aside at how noble she is in bearing her own travails. One day he can no longer contain the depth of his pain, but cannot bring himself to show her its roots. She comforts him so matter-of-factly, like a seraph that bleeds, telling him to smile, showing him to view his ache with more hope, while she clings to her teddy bear found in the junk heap with no clue how to quiet her gnawing hunger. End poem. And Pam, will you start us off on this one?
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember reading this poem before and being really, really impressed with it. And the whole idea of someone who has a wisdom beyond their years. And, you know, the idea of two strangers, you know, reaching out for each other and, you know, how, you know, the, what did I say in my comment? It's often those that have the least that give the most of themselves. And, you know, that is so true. Oftentimes, the more we own, the more money we have, the more we just want to hoard it. And there's oftentimes a real sense of giving among those that appear to have the least. And I really like a life with pomposity, but ennobled by the joy of just living with more equanimity than those in mansions, eating, drinking, and laughing their fill. Just wonderful emotive lines and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And what about you, Phil?
At first, I thought the little boy was probably real, or that he was actually existent. But when she says she comforts him, so matter-of-factly, like a seraph that bleeds. Seraph means basically the heavenly, like a heavenly kind of thing. So, like maybe you think he's her guardian angel, you know, because he says, telling him to smile, show him to view his ache and more with more hope. But yet, it says, where'd it go? She brings him, I don't know what I'm talking about. I can't find it now. Dang it. Anyway, it's basically, one day he can no longer contain the depth of his pain, but cannot bring himself to show her his roots because he don't want her to know that, you know, that he's not really existent. I mean, maybe I'm reading too far into it, but that's what I gather. It's just somebody that's a young girl in a war zone, left to fend for herself and starving, but yet, you know, God has placed a guardian angel over her to keep her safe, even, you know, and get her spirit shines through and brings him some comfort, if that makes sense. That's what I gather from it.
Yeah, I like that. Great comment, Felon. I think the biggest thing for me with this is that there's, he says a powerful image, but really it's like a powerful person, like someone who's able to go through a lot of adversity and is still so charitable and so willing to help others. I think I know a few people who are like this. Like it reminds me of my sister. Like, obviously we're not in a war-ravaged zone living on the streets, but just like some people's ability to maintain their good nature and their generosity and kindness, even when faced with very adverse circumstances. It's not me, that's for sure. Like, I can, like, I don't know. I feel like it's just people who feel like they aren't owed anything. And I don't know. I think that's probably the most powerful part of this. But really good write, David Meyerhoff.
I like that.
Thanks. Okay, so next up I have a poem by Beatnik and Felon. Would you read this for us? I'm posting it now, so it's going to be a second.
Yeah. Let's see here. This is by Beatnik, and it's called This Day I Won. Just rolled out of bed, washed my face and head. A girl called, so I put on my clothes. Just wanted to say hello. Someone to stay for just a while. She shows up dressed to beguile. We tear off each other's clothes. We get in bed, and the sheets we roll. She dresses quick, then out the door. Will I see her anymore? I'm right back where I started from, all alone and feeling dumb. Maybe I'll end this path I'm on with some pills and alcohol. I'll swallow the first full drink, some more. I wind up laying on the floor. The moments pass and the spirits move. Get up and fight. Don't want to lose. So I get up and hug the bowl, purge it all except my soul. It's about it's the best feeling I've ever had to decide to live through good and bad. This day I won. I've got my sanity. To live or not, it is up to me. End point.
Saul, great read, Felon. I really like this. I like the hopefulness in the ending. Like, I don't know, this is kind of calling back to, like, some of the other rights that we've read about, like, loss of innocence and stuff like that. But it's good to have that moment in the ending where you just say, no, to live or not, it's up to me, and take kind of control of yourself. You know, it reminds me, I think the poem was by Garden Delights, about people who choose to remain in their misery. And then at the end of the poem, she stood up and walked into, like, the sunshine and the springing grass and was able to allow herself to just feel happiness and not be stuck in this mire of looking at your life as if it was a bunch of skeletons of trees and all death and all decay. There are those elements. There is pain. There is intense loss, emptiness, sadness, but you can choose to live or not. It's up to you. I don't know. I thought it was cool. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this was really cool. I like how it's all about, like, I like that he wrote it in the couplet, and that it shows us the idea of someone who's pulled down into, like, the depths of despair, having trouble facing the day. And then the idea of trying to almost, like, you know, numb the pain or forget about it, you know, by finding that connection with somebody, but then realizing the connection wasn't there when they walked out. And I really liked this all the way through, but especially near the end, it became very gritty and raw and honest with that idea of, so I get up and hug the bowl, purge it all except my soul. I like the idea of just releasing, you know, everything, just, you know, realizing that you've made yourself sick physically and emotionally. So just a strong write and very well done.
Absolutely. And what about you, Fel? What did you think?
First, I mean, on a funny note, I was like, well, damn, where's this guy at that has emotions after having sex? There's so many times that you're like, well, women are usually the one left hugging the bowl and purging on the pills and stuff, because guys just don't have no emotions. But to see the guy have the emotion, that turns the table and really brings to light, you know, just because you're, you know, it breaks the stereotype thing of men have no emotions and men don't really see sex as anything other than sex. I mean, I like that because it really made me think, you know what, maybe there is somebody out there, you know, maybe somebody does have real emotions besides these guys that just want to go and go their own way. So, wow. I think he really hit a note inside of me, so I think this is really good. This is the day I'd won. I've got my sanity to live or not. It's up to me, and that is true. Everything that we do is dumb choices are made by ourselves, so we can choose to do the dumb shit, or we can just choose to do what's right and what's good for us. So I think this is an excellent write.
Me too. Great comment, Phil. And great comments all night, you guys. I really appreciate you guys. Next up, I have a piece by Lotus Castle. And Pam, would you give that a read for us?
Absolutely. Occupancy by Lotus Castle, and it goes like this. Along the lakeside, clasping cerulean discs where sakura blossoms quietly rustled, perfumed winds caressed my trails, submerging me in seventh heaven, in shadows of green ginkgo trees. Unknowingly, I brush tender arms, arms of a shy touch-me-not, locking it up, blushing times. How little pirates with hazel hues, the sparrow flapping in the air, perched on cherry twigs for a while, and looted nectars in a flash, striking wings of dainty butterflies. dipped in dyes of copper and sulfur, racing through the same radius, made it up to my latch spirits. Chirps and whistles I heard there, voicemails of many unseen birds, what they whispered in that hour, wild guesses filled my mind, in the niches where I silently vanished, only to find my forgotten Akito. End poem.
Oh, great read, Pam. This is a very, very cool piece. I really love the beautiful colors that she brings in with this imagery, the cerulean, the hazel hues, and the copper and sulfur. There's just so much color. It's like, it reminds me of one of those dreams where everything's just slightly too technicolor. And so it's, the unreality is really, really there. I don't know. And then I like this, you know, she explains the concept of ikigai, the reason for being. And I like that kind of being brought in the end as well. And what did you think of it, Fallon?
The imagery is like absolutely breathtaking. To me, it reminds me of a smaller tree against the bigger trees, maybe in a forest or whatever, and yet the birds that come in and perch upon their twigs and everything, it's like they're not forgotten. They didn't know that they actually existed among the bigger things. And it's sort of like a person thinks there's much bigger things than they are, but yet they don't realize they have made their mark and that there's a necessity for them in life. And I think this is what this says. It's that even though it's a small little tree, you know, it offers something to, or bears fruit or bears something to other things. It helps nourish them. So chirps and the whistles I heard there, voicemails of many unseen birds, what they whispered in that hour, wild guesses filled my mind. Yet it lets it know that it's not alone. It might be beneath some things, but still it stands tall. That's what I got from it.
Nice. Nicely done, Fallon. And Pam, what about you?
Well, first of all, I really like what Fallon had to say. You know, it's just really just wonderful imagery. I like how she uses nature imagery, but uses it in a way that's really just gritty and unique. I brushed tender arms of a shy touch me not, locking it up in blushing times. Hello, pirates with hazel hues, the sparrows flapping in the air. I like how there's this whole idea of the invisible world of nature. And yet it goes beyond that to almost the invisible world of someone's own thoughts. I really like where she says looted nectars in a flash, and how that describes the feeding frenzy of a hummingbird. But, you know, again, I think it also, you know, can be used as a metaphor for, you know, the idea of almost like innocence being taken away. And I like how she says, wild guesses filled my mind. The whole idea of what an overactive imagination can do with every little slight of sound and movement. So really just a thoughtful write and very well done.
Nice, Pam. Very nice.
Thank you.
You guys are killing it. Excellent comment. I'm going to post another poem, and I'll go ahead and give this a read, but this is actually the last poem I have permission for from the contest. So if you guys have any other writes, either of you, that you want to put up that are could fit intense imagery, which I know both of you have, that would be awesome. But
I'll go ahead and do that.
This appreciate it. But I am going to read this one. And this is, sorry, I lost my place. Oh, this is called Ultraviolet Catastrophe by A.P. Wanderer. A heliotrope night, you see Orion Nebula, a monochrome patch of gray light. The mauve hourglass, fairies, magenta firefly. Space travelers exchanging kisses with the stars, embracing the moon. Jupiter's entwined whispers, phosphate vapors. Saturn, a pomegranate seed, shooting star, a flicker, a firework. Venus, a tunnel balanced beam light. Thermal equilibrium bath her eyelashes like butterflies before dawn in the shadows. Nuclear frostbite when the darkness screams, my phantom shatters. The flames dissipate through man-made cracks. The teardrops won't shore up the bulkhead. The leaks from my eyes, a timepiece, saltwater greeting. The wind hugs dew, extinguishes a dimly lit fire, back-tested, bitter, self-absorbed dance. Arrow, dart, wavelength. Rent the compact corridors apart. I look for her, an optical angstrom. The darling dove firmament my cascading freefall. A vacuum eroded violaceous kaleidoscope. A measured leap radiation periwinkle amethyst rain. Catch me from the clutches of the midnight charcoal sky. A freight train waterfalling from the depths of morning light. A budding sword wired flame over fire to ignite. Juxtaposition plumb flowing with perennial judgment gravity. Counteract, clarity, fading. Mulberry over Earth's tapestry, a saber of cathartic constituent for us as an X-ray. The multitude employing remnants, Crayola ultraviolet swords. The lavender lens tunnels passage through the avalanche's epicenter. The galaxy's lullaby to newborn stars, illuminating floors. A floating aurora kayak with oars. End poem. And Fallon, will you start us off with a comment on this one?
Wow, this is a lot to take in, but what I gather from it, it's almost like the Northern Lights, basically, the beauty and the spectacle of everything, and how it just it's just this is a beautiful wonder that, you know, so many people don't get to see, and I haven't seen myself. I would love to see. But yet, it was just because the nuclear frostbite within darkness screams, my phantom shatters, and that would be just, you know, at the North Pole or wherever it is that there are the Antarctic, that they're still amazed and just in awe of these beautiful lights, and yet not everyone gets to see that. So that's what I've gathered so far. I have to go back and read some more because this is a lot to take in. It's just a lot of great imagery, and this is just a plethora of just bringing it to the table for you for what you wanted from imagery. Great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment, Fallon. And Pam, what about you? What did you think?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this has such beautiful imagery. I love how it describes the power and the beauty of the Northern Lights, not just the Northern Lights, but of the universe itself. My stepsister, 3 out of her 5 kids were conceived after her and her husband had watched the Northern Lights together. And after the third one, we were like, you two really need to stop watching them. Nothing to do with the poem. I just didn't hear that. But I really liked this all the way through, but especially that second stanza, with nuclear frostbite when the darkness screams, my phantom shatters. Because there is more to this poem, I think, than just describing the Northern Lights or the beauty of the universe. It's also about finding that sense of healing that comes when you release that scream, when you release that tears. And I really like a floating aurora kayak with oars. I like that she went with the kayak. You know, because with those kind of boats, all boats require paddling, you have to be very purposeful in your choice of movements. And so that really kind of just adds to the depth of the poem. So I think this was very well done.
Oh, excellent comment. I love that part too. Nice insights. I was thinking too that in the beginning, the Saturn, a pomegranate seed, shooting star, a flicker, a firework, that pomegranate seed piece really brings in, it made me think of company and how she ate the six pomegranate seeds, which tied her to the underworld for 6 months of the year. And I don't know, that pomegranate seed being there, like, especially in the beginning, it seems like there's so much foreshadowing of, like, death and destruction to come. But then, in the end, there's this kind of return to the beauty in the universe and the timelessness, because there's a tunneling through the avalanche's epicenter, and then the galaxy's lullaby to newborn stars illuminating floors. And as you said, the floating kayak with oars. But I like that because there's this kind of like hope in that end of the newborn stars illuminating new levels of the universe. And so the death of some things is the birth of others. And the death of those things has become, in this, a lullaby from the galaxy to its newborn stars. So I don't know. I really like that kind of circular. I don't want to say circular cycle, but I forgot what other word I was going to use other than cycle. So I like the cyclical nature of it. That's what I'll say about that. And the imagery is very packed in. So great job, AP Wanderer. And, all right, so, Pam, I'm going to go ahead and have you read your piece, and then...
All right. I don't know how intense this imagery is, but it's I wrote it for Faviana's last show, and I thought you and Felon might find it amusing, so I thought, what the heck?
Okay.
All right. So this is Medusa in the City, and it goes like this. Sweetie, I have a news flash for you. There's no one in this overworked, overrun monstrosity of a city that's perfect. We all have our flaws. We all make our mistakes. And we all eventually feel the things of consequence seep into our ass cheek. The lazy bastard can't get help with moving. The slut has gonorrhea and three baby daddies. The glutton is suffering from a gut-wrenching case of gas. And as for me, I have snakes for hair and turn men to stone when they make eye contact. Did you know I used to be a fashion model? I was the it girl of the season, champagne, limousine, golden eyes, and all the attention I craved, it was all at my fingertips. And the physical pleasures, there were two ways, three ways, four ways, and any damn way I wanted it. I knew how to play the game. I knew all the gossip that was passed around about me. The spoiled, egotistical brat. That's what they called me. But tell me, how is it my fault that the weak and the ugly give the beautiful everything they want? They also called me envious. But the thing with envy, it's a motivational tool of self-preservation that keeps you ahead of the competition. Well, as it turns out in this high-stakes industry, there's not much demand for a gal with writhing snakes on her head and glowing red eyes. And as for that jealous bitch who caught me in bed with her husband, I guess I should be thankful that she let me keep my tight ass and perky tits. Because it turns out, men don't care if you can turn them to stone as long as you erect their monument. End poem. I thought that would have been Felon.
That was quite excellent.
Oh my god, this is awesome.
Okay, Felon, you go first.
Oh my god, Pam, this is the kind of write I'm talking. This is the Pam write. This is the grown up write. This is the shit that I like about you. It's that raw, edgy thing. The lazy bastard can't help with moving the slut with gonorrhea and three baby daddies and the glutton and suffering. You know, and yet, you know, here she is. She's these beautiful blah 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 blah, and she's got these snakes in her hair because you know what? They fucking put them there. Because all the jealousy and all the people that had envy, but yet when she gets a little bit older, they're saying, oh, you're envy. But I like when you said this here, when you said, where did it go? Oh, they always call me envious, but the things with envy is a motivational tool of self-preservation. That keeps you ahead of the competition. Hell yeah, it does. If you're not envious of something, what's going to drive you sometimes? Because most people want what other people have, so you just have to have that little bit of push or nudge. And, you know, in the end, so what? We all have snakes in our hair. It's just how we comb them and put them up in ponytails. That's all, you know. And with the red eyes, you know, you put contacts on with that. People are always that little snake underneath. So I really like this. Excellent job.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God. I feel like you could probably make a living writing adult, a fraction of fairy tales for adults, because I've read a lot of pieces from you where you, like, personify different, like, characters, gods or goddesses or whatever, but, like, you make it so fresh. But it's also, like, you have your own voice, but you are completely able to, like, create these characters that are perfectly distinct, and I love this character. That ending stanza, of course, is perfect because it's so humorous, and it comes as the perfect mic drop moment at the end of this piece. But the whole monologue is honestly just something I admire. What are the other ways I was going to talk about this? How is it my fault that the weak and the ugly give the beautiful everything they want? I really like that. I don't know. It speaks to this thing in our society where this person's being called out for being envious or egotistical or whatever, but like you're a product of your environment. And so there's such a hatred for people who like get everything handed to them on a silver platter. And it's kind of like, why don't you criticize the system that rewards without merit? Because you can't blame the person. Like if you were in that position, you would profit off of it too. I really like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a really cool piece. I love when you write character pieces because you're just so good at it. Honestly, I feel like you could make a living doing scripts or something like that. Okay, Fel, I'm putting your piece up.
Okay. I don't know how descriptive this is, but I've wrote this not too long ago. It's called Burning Rain. Sound of the door slamming goodbye. Pride screams from inside. I'll never cry. Drowning within fears flows like a... That's a lie. When did I become so tough, standing firm? I've had enough. Once controlled to what I thought was love, I'm just a girl who just wanted us. What was I to do when breaking my trust? Lust fueled the burn on giving up. Held captive by your slightest touch. Craving your taste. Left me stuck. Sound of the door slamming goodbye. Pride screams from inside. I'll never cry. Journey within my fears flow. That's a lie. I'm a girl who learned to be tough. Took a stand because I had enough. Finally offering myself unconditional love. No longer blind, seeing there was never us. A burned bridge is a path you can't trust. Flames die to refusing. I'm stuck. Set free from your lost touch. Given up when I no longer give a fuck. End of poem.
Oh, damn. Phelan, I love this. Also, it was giving me strong vibes of that song, I Will Survive. I really like that in the beginning. There's this, like, complete, like, pain and betrayal. And still your pride screams from inside, I'll never cry. So, like, despite all the fears and despite the pain and betrayal that you experienced, your pride won't let you cry. It won't let you crawl back. And because of that, you have this ending that's very triumphant. A burned bridge is a path you can't trust. I really like that. There's no turning back. There's no crawling back, really.
Right.
Giving up was longer gave a fuck is such a strong ending line as well. It was really beautiful. And what did you think, Pam?
I really like this. I think it's just, well, first of all, I'm going to go ahead and put on one of my lists, my amazing rights list. You know, well, this is one of the things I don't understand about AP. I won't go on about this for too long, but I don't understand how a poem like this that's so hard-hitting and so emotive can have 93 views and no likes or comments. And when I bring that up, it's not a reflection on you because this is just an amazing poem. But I feel like people just don't want to sometimes take time. But what I like about this is it's another one that it's hard-hitting, it's raw, it's honest. It's I like that, Mika, you brought up that song, I Will Survive, because it very much has that feel to it. And what I like about this is about a woman who realizes her own strength and moves on. But what, another thing I particularly like about this is the second and third stanza. When did I become so tough, standing firm? I've had enough. Once controlled what I thought was love, I'm just a girl who wanted just us. What was I to do when breaking my trust? You know, there really is, I think, beneath every strong woman that has had to fight for herself, there's that woman that just wants to be loved for who she is, that didn't want to, you know, didn't want to be the tough bitch, but, you know,
Amen.
Circumstances made her the tough bitch that, you know, she had to become. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
Damn it, Pam, you just nailed it. So, oh, my God, like for real, because this is, me and Jerry broke up, and this is basically, you know, and he pushed me to that limit of having to do that, because you know what? I love myself enough that I'm not gonna put up with no man's shit like that, you don't have trust, you don't have a relationship. So I had to finally say, you know what? I was in love with us. I was in love with being in love, I think, and I was not in love with him per se. And so when I finally got the lust under control, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. That's all that was. That was nothing but that. So, you know, sometimes raw honesty hits us in the face, and we see that, you know what, if the path that we took, we can burn that bridge because we don't want to cross it again. I'd rather drown in the waters below with all the other corpses than walk back over that bridge and say, will you take me back? Ain't no way. Never.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I like that. Very well said there.
Thank you.
Great pieces, you guys, and great comments all through the night. I so appreciate you guys being here and sharing your pieces with us, and also all the insights on the poetry that you had. And, of course, thanks to everyone who wrote for the show. I really appreciate you guys and allowing us to read your pieces on air and discuss them. And, man, it's been a really cool show. We went to a lot of different kind of tones and pieces, a lot of variety. So thanks again, everybody. And I don't know what's upcoming. What's coming up tomorrow, Pam? Pamalicious? Oh, everybody dropped. Okay, well, in that case, I'm just going to say goodnight, and thank you to everyone again.